Hello, I'm Scott Soschnick.
And I'm Evan Novy Williams, and this is the NFL stands for Never Ending Financial Longevity Sports Business Podcast, The Sportacast.
Man, this is a chance for you to pump some tires and you go NFL. But this is the Soschnick Playing Hurt podcast. This is a million, the disappointment, you know, the focus group disappointment podcast. Any way you wanted to go there, you made it about the NFL.
Tough couple hours in the Soschnick household, Scott.
Hours?
Days? Yeah.
Hours. I have been stuck in the house for 3 or 4 days with my wife and my focus group of one, all COVID, you know, down for the count for a few days. And insult to injury, we were headed to LA. We were supposed to be headed to LA yesterday so that the focus group of one could be in the outfield shagging fly balls during Home Run Derby. Ugh. And of course, you know, we had to nix that. So, you know, from the excitement of something really fun to just kind of sitting there feeling crappy and, you know, just the total disappointment.
Is there an age limit for that? Is he potentially eligible next year? What is the
I'm sure he is. I don't know. We'll figure something out. Yeah. You know, you like to give the experiential stuff, but
of course
we'll figure something out. Yeah. I would think if he was 45, he'd probably like, you know, Scott, maybe not.
I'm asking for myself, actually.
Yeah. Well, you're almost in the demo. You might be able to make it now. So now that we've got the disappointment, then thank you for asking how I'm feeling, Novy Williams, even though you didn't.
Always.
Why don't you now get to the NFL? Things are going, let's go the good, bad. As bad as I felt, that is how good things are going for the NFL. And my favorite part about this story broken by Kurt Bodenhausen is that normally, maybe everybody went on cruise control and they wait for the Green Bay Packers and their annual meeting, because of the Packers, you know, and I'm air quoting publicly traded company here. That's when they put out their disclosure. So everybody kind of knows what the national revenue is around the NFL. Kurt didn't wait. Kurt went and dug out that information. Good for you, bud. Why don't you tell me what it said?
So yeah, the NFL, the shared revenue number in the NFL last season was a record $11 billion. That is money, primarily what the league gets from its TV partners, plus its national sponsorships, a little bit of ticket sales, et cetera. So that's the money that the NFL generates that's not local revenue by each team. And that money gets distributed essentially evenly among the 32 teams, Scott. So every team last year got a $345 million check from the NFL.
All right, well, let me jump in there, though, because yep. I love this, because let's put this in perspective for people. So just on the shared national revenue, that is before a ticket is sold, so anybody steps in and buys a beer or a hot dog, yeah, or a brat, you know, if you're in Green Bay. Before any of that happens, you have $345 million.
That's right.
Now let me ask you, Mr. Novy Williams, what is the single largest expense for an NFL owner?
Your player cost.
Your player cost. What is the salary cap in the NFL?
$190 million, something right
there. All right, so let me see if I have this right. $345 in, $190 out. $345 greater than $190 prior to much of the local revenue we just talked about.
Sounds like a good business, right?
It sounds like a good business to me. I was just going to say that.
I think one of these should sell for $4.6 billion, Scott.
All right. This seems like, I think this NFL thing might go places. It might actually work.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, we talked through a lot of these kind of directional numbers when we talked about the Denver Broncos when they were on the market, and kind of comparing it when Chelsea was also for sale, about how different the economics here. Yeah, you're highlighting exactly what is so great about the NFL's business model. If you're an NFL owner, is that before you do any of the local stuff, you're cashing way more than the cost to field a team, plus probably a lot of the cost. This is why teams are making $200-$300, depending on your team, millions of dollars a year in profit, is because this is the setup that they have. It's pretty fantastic.
I don't know if you could hear the boom of thunder in the background. I mean, it's like that was a John Facenda like boom of thunder, perfect, you know, on the field of Green Bay. We're talking Green Bay, and we're getting sort of the kind of thing Facenda would love to talk about.
And the craziest, one of the crazy things about these numbers is that this is before the new 11-year, $115 billion TV package.
Yeah, before the real money comes in.
Yeah, Kurt's numbers, again, we're talking $345 million shared by each team, or given to each team last season. Kurt says that's going to jump to well over $400 million the minute these new TV deals kick in. So again, it's great economics now. The economics get even better when this new round of TV deals, which has already been inked and signed, when they kick in next year.
Yes. My wife is mad at me. What? Because I left something on the table. I think she's mad at me. I'm not done eating yet, though. Like, I started eating before the podcast, and I was going to finish eating when I was done with the podcast, and now she just took the food away. That's not okay. Like, I should be able to keep the food near me, like, during the podcast, so I have it as soon as I'm done. That's a little bit of a tangent. Hold on. I got a cough too, Novi Williams. Ready?
Oh, boy.
No, this is the way it's going to be. Hey, this is it. But there are no hiccups or coughs for the NFL business. And let's talk about Brian Rolapp. I love this, that Rolapp wrote a guest piece for the Monday Morning Quarterback, where he sort of, we're talking about media and how important it is to the NFL business. It's obviously the number one revenue driver in the NFL, but that is, it's not static. Things are changing in media, and the NFL wants to change along with it. And one of the ways we're going to see how the NFL has opted to move forward is Sunday Ticket. Everybody knows that it's been sort of, you know, it was the number one reason why, God, I don't even know how many years ago I'm going to go. Like, if you wanted to be able to watch all of the out-of-market games. So I will say, Eben, if you were a fan of the pick a team,
Jacksonville Jaguars.
But you lived in New York, you're obviously not going to see the Jaguars games. But if you signed up for DirecTV and Sunday Ticket, which was exclusive to the satellite provider, that was a big, you know, differentiation there, then you could watch every one of your Jaguar games. So that makes perfect sense. But it's not the world of reality anymore. So Brian made it clear that this new world order is moving to a streaming service. And I love this stat because he starts with the old days. You ready for this? And even I wasn't around for this, but I think you'll enjoy it. So in his article, he said 1950, you ready for this? 1950, one in 10 living rooms had a TV. And one in 10 had a TV. And he cited as a source for that Britannica, which brought me back to my youth, probably not you. You probably were probably just on the cusp of that thing where, as a student, you could look everything up on the internet.
Yeah, I straddled both those things. Yeah, I was using the encyclopedias for.
You had the Encyclopedia Britannica? You had one of those? Uh-huh, what color? Yeah. Where in your house was it? You can probably picture the whole thing, right?
So the ones that I remember using were like 18 volumes. It was like each one for a letter of the alphabet.
The letter had to.
Yeah,
some letters were combined because there wasn't so much stuff, but then some letters had their own.
Yeah, I did definitely use that for sure.
I had the white one with the blue little leaf, that's what it looked like. Yeah, so I got a real kick out of the fact that he was citing Britannica for that, because that's what it brought me back to. And for me, back in the day of those times, that would have been the really long cord cable clicker where you had three tiers depending on your... I think ESPN was in my middle tier. If memory serves, I'm trying to think. I think it was in the middle tier, like 17 or 18. Have to ask Jimmy and Chuck Dolan. It was a Cablevision one, that I know, but I don't really remember what channel ESPN was back then. But that's a long way to go to say that things are changing in NFL media. And I mean, he mentions there Amazon Prime, Peacock, Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus. We've talked about Apple now streaming, you know, Apple Plus and the MLS deal. But what we're going to have now, NFL Plus. Everybody's fallen in love with the Plus. It's going to be a subscription product where you get games and multitudes of other things for NFL. I mean, the bulk of your local NFL coverage is locked up for years to come. So if you're a Jets fan living in the New York area, you're going to be watching that on your over-the-air. That's locked up for a while. Who knows what it'll be down the line? Who knows? I mean, I'm still waiting to see an NFL owner says, wait, I want my own direct-to-consumer. I can do it better. Everything. I can do everything better because I know my fans better than you know my fans. But anyway, The fact that he's looking ahead and saying that this new world order of streaming is where our fans are. We heard Don Garber say the same thing. You know, it's kind of younger fans, more digitally savvy, 100% to Apple. Obviously, the NFL wants the scale of linear TV, but at least for this product and DirecTV, we're going streaming. And I'm guessing that you are somebody who would be happy about that.
I think it's smart. Yeah. And again, this is Brian Rolapp, the chief media and chief business officer of the NFL. The line that jumped out to me, Scott, in this op-ed is in the not too distant future, you will see a whole new NFL media. And it's the thing that jumps out about that is that the NFL has for a long time been probably or among the most conservative adopters of streaming in the sports world. right? And as you mentioned, their new round of TV deals outside of just that small Amazon piece, almost entirely for the same kind of traditional TV partners that they've had for a long time. They've always loved that scale there. If the NFL is out here kind of publicly saying, we are ready to dive full into the streaming models and we are ready to embrace this, that means that, you know, it's already well upon us, right? The fact that the NFL, which likes to be in a lot of ways, likes to wait and see, likes to see what other people are doing, decide if they want to dip a toe in later on, the fact that they are coming full out and saying this, I think, is actually a really interesting indication of how much the rest of the industry has already embraced it. But yes,
yeah, I'm standing in front of the pool here, Eben, this isn't exactly Roger Goodell doing a triple Lindy off the high dive. This is still a toe or maybe a foot on the top step.
Yes, but again, if it's a recognition right after doing $115 billion worth of deals with CBS, NBC, Fox, and ESPN to be coming out and saying this, I think is an indication of the way the NFL is going, and also means that every other league, if they're not already there, has to also be thinking about this, right? And MLS is a good example of a league that's gone way further, way faster, probably because they have to in some ways. But yes, I think when the behemoth that is the NFL, as we just said, $11 billion worth of shared revenue, when the behemoth that is the NFL is talking like this, I think that is kind of signifies at least a shift of some sort within our industry.
Right. Well, let's not forget, you know, Thursday Night Football is on Amazon to be exclusive. So again, that's how you test. It's kind of a little testing ground. Let's see how that does. First, you did it non-exclusively. Now you do it exclusively. Let's see how those games rate, how many people watch and deem to go that streaming route. And by the way, hope I don't lose my my Wi-Fi. We have an absolutely torrential rainstorm. Has it hit you yet?
I'm looking out the window on your video. The storm alert on my phone, so I know it's coming.
Let me tell you, I'm here where you're getting that. It is a torrential. If this was an NFL game now, it would be like absolutely perfect, muddy, terrible conditions in like Soldier Field or something.
Looking forward to me.
I mean, the wind is coming. I mean, you see the rain sideways, one of those. It's really great. But let me ask you this.
Yeah. And then I've got a question for you. Yeah.
All right, you go first. You give the question first.
So a question for you, because we've talked about MLS and Apple, and now it looks like Sunday Ticket could be going to Apple as well. If you're MLS, do you like the idea of Apple being really aggressive for sports rights and maybe building a hub where a lot of sports fans can watch a lot of different things and maybe being a little bit lower on the priority list? Or do you prefer a world where Apple really slow plays it in sports, MLS can be one of the, if not the most important live sports platform product on the Apple platform? Which of those two realities is more enticing to you if you're Major League Soccer?
May I put on my Gary Bettman hat then?
Please.
Okay, so Gary Bettman went to NBC Sports and said, we wanted to be treated as a first-class, important property, which NBCSN did, and you had their Game of the Weeks, the Wednesday, whatever it was. And where's Gary Bettman in the NHL now? Right? They're back on ESPN, and that's where the sports fans are. If Apple becomes the place for sports, I think MLS and will be fine being there as well. You want to be where the eyeballs are, like fish where the fish are. Yeah. And I understand they'll get the hardcore MLS fan will be there now, but I think it would only behoove them to build the fan base. Again, we talked about sort of the distribution versus the dollars argument made. And at some point, you do need to grow the distribution. You need to find new fans, right? You don't want to, I mean, the NFL, my Lord, I mean, you're talking international. Are you saturated in the US, right? Are you comfortable saying like every NFL fan that there is to mine in the NFL is like knows about it and will find it?
Got to be pretty close at this point.
Right, yeah. You got to be pretty close. But that's thus the international push for the NFL as well. And so now my question for you, if I can watch sort of your out-of-market games and there'll be shoulder programming and, who knows, insider programming on my favorite team and I can watch my quarterback drive home and I can do a film session with my cornerback, you know, whatever. The coach's show exclusive to, you know, NFL Plus on my channel for my team. I didn't see a price on this.
Yeah.
What's the price? What? I know football fans are addicted. I know they're addicts. I got it. It's good. That's the greatest business in the world. You want your customers addicted. That's great. Just like people can't go without listening to the Sportacast on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I got it, but we don't charge you. How much do you think people are willing to pay? Where will it come? And don't forget though, there's something called a little Barker channel, right? You get somebody in, you get them addicted, and then what do?
You raise the price.
Exactly. And we might have something to go on and talk about that.
We
may have a segue, but let's answer this first, and then we'll get to the segue.
That actually makes sense. It's a good question. I think it all hinges on exactly what the live game access is, right? So from what I understand, there's local and national games on mobile devices, maybe some out of market live preseason games. I don't think you're going to get much from a live game.
Preseason games. Nothing bigger on the marquee.
Yeah. So I think that from a live game perspective, unless you're watching on your phone, I actually don't think NFL Plus is going to deliver all that much, at least not right now. Look, it's the NFL. I think they're going to be able to charge a lot. I am consistently shocked by pricing. And again, this is a good segue to what we're going to talk about next. The idea that the Nesson over the top offering in Boston, in the Boston area, New England, was going to be $30 a month, I think, seemed crazy to me. And that does include live games and a lot of things. So it's a good question. I would assume it's going to be priced anything from $9.99 to $30. I don't know. I'm speaking way out of my depth here. Do you have a thought on the pricing? I think it's going to be, it's the NFL, so it's not going to be cheap, but there's not much that, unless you're a diehard fan, or unless all you want to do is watch live games on your phone, which is, I'm sure, true for a subset of the NFL's particularly younger fans. I'm not sure there's that much in here for you right now.
Yeah. Is this wholly owned and operated? Are we looking at a situation where brought in some partners that have equity in the network now, where Amazon, you get the streaming expertise as well as the e-com, and Sinclair as well, though. So distribution heft if you needed it. I'm curious, is one of the companies, let's just say Apple, what the heck, we'll just go with Apple. If it is Apple, will they have equity in this venture?
And the NFL is certainly considering it, right? I mean, we know they were out there, they're shopping those things,
what I love about the NFL.
Going to be a strategic investor. Yeah.
Yeah. This is sort of like, buying a house low, and renting it out. So you're covering your payments, you're covering your mortgage, right? Maybe you're even putting a few bucks in your pocket each month, and you're getting the appreciation of the asset itself. It's the win-win.
Yeah.
So tell me now, now that we segued 5 minutes ago, though, what we were talking about clearly is ESPN Plus, because you're paying more for it now than you were 2 months ago.
ESPN Plus, the price is jumping, Scott, from $6.99, starting in about a month, jumping from $6.99 a month to $9.99 a month. It's a 43% increase. I think when it launched, it was $4.99, so there have been two $1 increases in the past. This is by far the biggest increase that ESPN Plus has ever seen, obviously happening in the backdrop of, I think, two trends here. One being live rights are just getting more and more expensive, as we've discussed. The ESPN just did $2.8 billion deal for Monday Night Football. And then secondly, the markets have changed, and the way in which investors are thinking about publicly traded companies, and Disney is one of them, is that they want to see more, they're shifting from growth expectations to profit expectations, and raising your price on your streaming service is a way to signify to investors that, maybe this thing can be more profitable or can be profitable, whatever it is. It's a way to show return on investment immediately.
Yeah. But you also have a big risk of churn there. I think
a risk of churn. And you mentioned a couple of days ago on the show, Reed Hastings and his pricing for Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
You price it low, you get people in, and then you want each increasing uptick to be not enough that it makes people jump and think, this is now too expensive for me. $1 increases, I think, are easy for people to ignore. A 43% price hike maybe is a different category. You may see more churn on this than you did when it went from $4.99 to $5.99, or from when it went from $5.99 to $6.99.
Yeah, but when I read your stuff, whether coming off of the Disney earnings call and Bob Chapek is talking about the future of the company, the one thing I always see is a prognostication of subscribers. Where are we for Disney Plus, and where do we hope to be in the future? And it's the same with the New York Times, right? It's one of the reasons they went out and got The Athletic. It was about acquiring subscribers, and everybody has subscriber aspirations, right? So rather than the a la carte, if I'm Disney, wouldn't you rather have somebody subscribing to Disney Plus, which gets you Hulu and ESPN Plus, sort of the overarching umbrella than the a la carte offering. So by raising the price on the underlying asset, which is, oh, that was like a Bobby Brady, like, you know, very high voice thing is what it is. I think you're sort of pushing people toward, well, why don't I just sign up for Disney Plus? I'm sure somebody in my house will enjoy the Hulu. They'll enjoy the, you know, whatever else, the Frozen or whatever else people want to watch, because the price difference isn't that disparate right now.
Yeah, you're right. And we can get into those economics. So they're not raising the price of the Disney bundle. So ESPN Plus going to $9.99 a month, the Disney bundle, which is, as you said, Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu, stays at $13.99.
Oh, that's a no-brainer.
If you are a household that wants the other two things, Hulu and Disney Plus,
even if you don't want the other things, that is a no-brainer. You can slip and fall and watch something on Hulu that you wouldn't have found.
Yeah. And again, just to go back, because I mentioned that Nessun number, Nessun, the local New England over-the-top service, $30 a month. DAZN is $19.99 a month, and not a knock to DAZN, but if you're a sports fan, unless you just are obsessed with boxing, I think almost everybody would say that ESPN Plus has a broader array of sporting events that they want to watch. Disney Plus, I think, is still, I mean, certainly when it was $4.99, I was shocked at how cheap it was. I would still say that $9.99 feels relatively cheap, but the more and more that these streaming services gradually increase the price, this idea of we're going to cut the cord and things are going to be cheaper because we can choose what we want to watch, I think, Scott, it becomes more and more a fantasy that the cost of each of these things piecemeal is ending up, I think, very quickly, if it isn't there already, just to be more expensive than the cable bundle was when people started revolting 5 years ago.
Two thoughts. One, I told you so. Anybody who listened to this show all those years ago, what did Soshnick say?
Yep.
I'm sticking with the cable bundle because when all is said and done and this a la carte is pieced together and there's going to be so many different outlets that are going to be showing things that I want, one on this one on that one, and I've already lost track, like which show's on what, so I don't want to deal with it. Yeah, you're going to pay more than if you just stick with the cable, and that's what I did, and frankly, I'm happy with it. And two, when we send out our digital clip Christmas cards, I think you just had the Jimmy Pitaro card. We can send him the, oh, I think it's rather cheap, right? You know, oh, what a great value ESPN Plus is. I think that's what I heard you say. So
yeah,
you know,
I don't want to endorse
there's your
the
Christmas
thing,
present,
but I do,
Jimmy Pitaro.
I have been surprised at how cheap it is. And maybe the truth is that is a, again, that's a way to get people in early, and that those days are over. And maybe in 12 months, we're talking about $9.99 to $12.99. I have no idea, but it's a lot of out of market sporting events. It's still, I think, a fairly competitive price.
You know what this reminds me of? And I do this just for sport. This has got nothing to do with money and being cheap. This is really just for sport. You know, the Sirius XM you get on your car, like they give you 6 months, you buy a new car or you lease a car and you get Sirius XM for 6 months.
Sure.
And then it ends. And then they are all over you. Like they'll start, oh, it's, you got a week to go or whatever. They think they got me hooked. I really don't care. It does not bug me. The commercials don't bother me one bit. I literally do not care. Like it doesn't mean anything to me. I'll find the look. I find a little charm in that when I'm driving, I go out of range of something. So I can't listen. Let's say if I'm driving north from New York to wherever, I can no longer get the Mets or the Yankees. Now I have to listen to the Red Sox. Hmm. You know, if I'm something like I find, or I'm going south. Now I got the Orioles, the Nationals, almost a good segue. You know, I find that charming. I have gotten them to, I swear, you're going to love this. I have gotten Sirius XM to offer me one penny for 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
To extend for 6 months for one penny. You know what I said?
Did you say no?
I said no.
Oh my gosh.
They must
can't
be
go
like,
cheaper
what
than
is,
that, Scott.
What is wrong with this guy, right?
They can't give me a better offer than that.
Yeah, you could not, like, yeah, you want to give me free for the next, you know, for the duration of the lease of the car? Okay. I mean, like, listen, my wife might like it or the focus group of one might like it. I myself don't care.
If they offered to pay you a like penny that. To take it, would you?
Now I can profit to take it? Sure. Okay, yeah, why not?
So you're right on the edge there.
Yeah. I hope they're listening.
They're
and somebody forwards
away,
this to them.
2 cents swing away from getting you to take.
Yeah,
this.
Exactly. All right. So yeah, you're gonna have to stack those pennies real high if you want to keep on to Juan Soto. By the way, he had a little segue to the Nationals. Let's close with him. $440 million. If that what I saw offer, and he said no, thank you. I guess he's looked at what some other players are getting these days. Now, is it the money? Like the sort of, is it the average annual? Is it that? Or like how this thing, we all know the Nationals are for sale. I don't want to be a prospective buyer. I'm sitting there talking to Steve Greenberg and Allen and Company, and I hear they're offering $440 million. Well, oh, let's pump these brakes. Like, let's talk about this if I'm going to bid on this team.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good question. I mean, first of all, $440 million. How much Sirius XM can Juan Soto buy with that ticket? On the team sale side, this reminds me of the Broncos, right? 2 months or 3 months before
Russell Wilson,
before Rob Walton committed to the Broncos, the Broncos made a massive trade, gave away a huge amount of future first round and I believe second round draft picks to land Russell Wilson, a quarterback that ideally is going to be with them through, he's in the prime of his career right now, for the next 5 years or so, who knows. But right before the team got sold, the people who were running the Broncos made a decision that was pretty material to the future, short-term and long-term, of the team. That kind of shocked me, that I was surprised back then that was a decision that would get made, knowing that somebody else was going to be cutting that check to Russell Wilson, and also having to kind of absorb the draft ramifications of that. I would be surprised, I think, if Juan Soto is thinking directly about that. I mean, this seems way more to be a money thing. And I say that knowing full well that $440 million is an insane amount of money. Would be
but if you're Juan Soto, if you're
in baseball history.
Yeah, but there is a correlation besides your own salary. Hold on, Edmund, besides your own salary, if I'm Juan Soto, I need to know who's going to buy the team to know if they're going to surround me with other players.
100%. And that's more true in baseball than any other sport, right? Which we've talked about, that the Steve Cohen can buy the Mets and make them the best team in baseball in a year, just by willing to double what they're paying their players. And that's not true in any of the other major U.S. leagues. Yeah. So maybe that is a part of it. The Juan Soto is still very young. The Nationals won the World Series in 2019. I don't think they've had a winning season since, and they're not a very good team.
I think I saw Strasburg pitch.
Right,
didn't I see Strasburg pitch recently?
I don't know, but it's not looking good right now. So maybe if Juan Soto wants to know if this is a team that's going to be spending at Steve Cohen levels, or if it's going to be a team that's spending at way lower levels, maybe that's relevant to him. But to me, it's a money thing. Again, even though this is a $440 million offer, it's offering him $29.3 million a year, which is that top 15 in baseball right now? I'm not sure that it is. Max Scherzer is getting $43 million. So the top line number is huge, but if he cares about being one of the highest paid players in baseball on a year in, year out basis, this salary, that offer, 15 years, 440, doesn't get him close to that.
So would you care more about the average annual value or the total?
Me, I'm retiring after year one of this contract.
But, my arm, that's what you're saying?
Yeah. I think for a lot of athletes, and you know this as well, their salary is an ego thing as much as it is a life and a comfort thing, right? And that's true for college football coaches as well. Everyone's aware of what everybody else is making, and he knows that if he's paid more than anybody else in baseball on a year in, year out basis, that means something, right? And being paid out of the top 15 also probably means something.
All right, so if I said to Juan Soto, Soto, I'll boost one of two things. I can either boost your salary, or I can boost your EA Sports or MLB The Show rating. Which one's he picking?
It's a great question.
Is he involved in both?
I wish we could ask him that. And the other thing about this is that there's obviously in some ways a push and pull between how much money he can make and then how much money the team is willing to spend on other things, if he cares about how much they're spending to put a team around him as well. So there's a lot of interesting folds here. This feels like, and maybe I'm just a cynic, Scott, this feels like he goes to the Dodgers on a 12-year, $400 million contract or something like that. But I would be I'd be happy to be wrong about that. But it certainly seems like it is a good time right now to be Juan Soto.
You say cynic, I say realist. I also say he is Edmund Novy Williams on the Twitter at Novy_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on the Twitter at Soschnick Hour. Producer Matt Whitehurst. Thank you, Matt, for everything you do. Our digital media editor is Cora Veltman. She likes it when I remind you that the show can be found at Sporticast, which is the hub of what will soon become the Sportico Media Network.